You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining our door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. How are you doing this evening? You know, I was so dreading today because, you know, I was checking the weather on my weather widget and it was saying 100 today. And
they lied.
I love those kind of lies. I love them. It wasn't 100. It was very, I did something really sort of touching today. I danced at a memorial service.
Oh, for who?
Dennis Harris, who was a professor of history at Sonoma State, and he had actually fallen and been paralyzed from the neck down a little over a year ago.
Ooh.
And passed away in June, I think it was, of this year. And he and his wife and many of their friends and members of their family, they loved Hawaii. He had a really, really big love of Hawaii and also of music. And so one of his best friends dances with us in our Saturday hula classes, and he had asked if any of us would dance. So we did two dances, and it was very sweet.
Great.
It was a great experience to do it.
Well, no, you know, it's interesting. People don't usually associate hula with a memorial ceremony. Mm-hmm. For weddings, yes. Uh-huh. Celebrations, feasts. Uh-huh.
But boy, in Hawaii, you definitely have dancers.
Well, yes, absolutely. Because it's part of the whole culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful.
It was a lovely memorial service. Really lovely. Anyway, so I was happy that it wasn't 100.
I'm sure you were,
degrees.
And I'm sure everyone else was.
And
too.
Everyone at the farmer's market, everyone was saying, oh, God, don't you wish it would stay like this? Because it's not supposed to be 100 on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah, they say it's peaking tomorrow and Tuesday and maybe getting better Wednesday.
Good.
Better is relative.
Yes, it is. But for now, it's good. It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. I'm here in the studio with Allegra Broughton, who has her show called Connections.
The first and third Wednesday
8 to
evenings.
10.
Yes,
they let you on earlier than they let me. They won't let me on that early.
Oh, really? Well, you know, I guess I'm right for like after drive time and before the witching hour. I actually would be perfectly happy in the late wee hours.
Yes, I'm more on the witching. You know, I'm on 10 to midnight.
That's
good. I think I get too rowdy to go in any earlier. Yeah, but
well,
you are
a wild woman.
We're not getting rowdy at all because this is Mouthful. This is not Red Shoes Rodeo. But you know why we're jabbering like we are. It's because it is our membership drive, in this case the fall membership drive, with lots of exciting things going on. So let me tell you what I have coming up on the show. You'd have to be living, you know, in a place with no electricity, no anything, not to be thinking about Julia Child lately. She has been all over the media.
She has been all over the media.
Yes, and she's right here in the studio. So I got to thinking, because I was very lucky. I knew Julia. I didn't know her well, but I knew her. She knew me. I had a couple of really lovely meals with her and talked to her from time to time. And so I was going to talk a little bit about that. And then in 1999, she and Jacques were here promoting the series Cooking with Julie and Jacques on KQED, and I was invited to do an interview with them at a winery in Santa Rosa, and KQED allowed us to record it because it was for their leadership circle, I think, you know, their high the people who give them buckets of
the
money.
The mucky-mucks. Yes.
And so as all this, you know, the movie Julie and Julia has come out, I just started thinking about, you know, the number of radio shows that I've done that involved Julia Child in one way or another. I had Julie Powell, who wrote the book Julie and Julia, on. That is an interview that mysteriously completely disappeared from the face of the earth and the ether.
How odd.
We have no CDs. We have no mini discs. We cannot.
It's poltergeist. What can you say?
Yeah. And, you know, I have to admit, it's okay. It's one of the hardest interviews I've ever done, in that she had a very flat affect. We'll talk about that more in a couple minutes. So let me tell you what we're doing. Tonight we're going to air a condensed version of my interview with Jacques and Julia up at the Kendall Jackson Wine Center in 1999. And the next week, I interviewed Stephanie Hirsch, who for 16 years was Julia's very close assistant. And she just has a marvelous glimpse into both sort of Julia's character as a public person, but also how they work together. So we're going to hear that next week, and we're also going to hear some excerpts from when I've had Jacques Pépin in the studio two or three times here. So we're going to have some excerpts from Jacques as well, because he and Julia were so close and so important, especially in the last decade or so of Julia's life.
Well, all I know is that we're all going to want more butter after tonight.
And we should. Butter is good for you. That's butter, something else we can talk about.
No, mo butter, mo better.
Mo butter, mo better. It is good. And I can even tell you why it's
butter
good.
Butter is my friend.
Butter should be your friend.
Butter is my friend. Crisco is not even a food.
No, Crisco's not a food.
No, it is not even in any food group other than tires, maybe.
There you go. Yeah, it's a trans fat. You don't need Crisco. Butter is good. It's good for you, especially if it's organic butter. Another topic entirely, perhaps. But what we're chatting first, and Allegra has come in because we want to talk to you about getting involved with KRCB. If you aren't already, or if it's time to renew, or if you love radio so much, you would like to have your own watt.
You can adopt a watt.
Yes, we are strengthening our signal.
Oh, look at all these great premiums.
Yes,
too.
We've got a whole bunch of premiums. But let me tell you first, the number to call, 584-2020. If you're listening outside the area, that is area code 707-584-2020.
Or online.
You can go online, krcb.org.
Yes, you can click on Pledge Now, and you can see all the pledges that are available unique to this particular show, and there's a bunch of really good ones.
Yeah, and also the what. You can adopt a what, and what this means is you are helping us. We have to raise $75,000 to match a $75,000 grant. We are finally, after 15 years with the strength of a light bulb, we are going from 150 watts to 1,500 watts.
Yay!
The new transmitter is already installed, and now we have to build the antenna. And one of the ways we thought we could get the community to help us is to let you all adopt a watt.
And what do they get if they adopt a watt?
You get a certificate saying that this watt is yours, and you also get a bottle of Devero 365, a red wine that I suspect means drink me daily.
I think it does. Yes, I think.
So it's $20 to adopt a watt. You can adopt as many watts as you would like, and you will get a bottle of wine for each of the watts that you adopt. And the number to call, 584-2020, is how you do it. We can take your pledge very quickly. Mouthful has been on the air, oh my gosh, 14 years.
Wow.
14 years
I've
been doing this.
In other words, it's in puberty.
Yes.
It's going to start
high school. It never comes home on time, and it sleeps until 3 in the afternoon.
Well, that's a good thing.
But it's the 14th year. We will be celebrating in some way at the end of October.
Ooh, yeah.
For 14 years, I've been bringing people from all over the country, people from Europe, every now and then someone from Asia, here to talk to you. And
hey, folks, this is a great show. I am a big fan of Michelle Anna Jordan, both as her Red Shoes Rodeo music persona and her food persona here on Mouthful. Please do call when you can. And I think now is a good time.
I think now is an outstanding time.
504-2020. I think we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and just so you know, especially if you're a new listener, maybe even new to public radio, if you're new to Sonoma County, or if you found us online through my Oh, so lovely Facebook page.
It is a lovely
Mouthful.
It is a lovely Facebook page.
Here's how public radio, especially community public radio, works. The programmers, the people that bring you the local programming, we are just like you. We're volunteer. We join the station, you know, send in my membership dues. If I'm having a great year, send in more. If I'm having a lousy year, I send
in
less.
Basic, yeah.
But, you know, we're all members, most of us here at the station, who do programming. And then the programming we do as volunteers. We don't get paid. There's not a staff behind Mouthful.
No, no. Sadly, the staff is always not quite here, but we do it ourselves.
Yes, we do it. That means I'm the producer, and the producer is the person who finds the guests, books the guests, gets the guests into the studio. I pretty much do everything except engineer. Normally, Lawrence Alberti is my engineer right now. Tonight we have Mark Prowl assisting. Thank you very much, Mark. But it's an all-volunteer effort, and we've managed to make a name for Mouthful throughout the country.
Yeah.
Mouthful is known in New York. It's known wherever people write cookbooks or do any sort of touring, because it's one of the only radio programs that will have guests of this nature. There's not a lot of them in the Bay Area.
I'm surprised.
And we've gotten four James Beard nominations.
Wow.
And so that's also brought our name, because the James Beard Awards, the event is a big deal, and the name is up there on the screen,
Yeesh.
You know, for everyone to see. And so people say, Mouthful, I'm going to the Bay Area, so I can
try
to get on the show.
This is programming par excellence.
And we couldn't do it, and we wouldn't do it, and in fact, we wouldn't be here. I would not be here if it were not for the support of listeners who call. Let's say, and they call this number, they call 584-2020, or they go now to KRCB.org. So the $40 package, it's the basic Watt package. You get a keyboard calendar, a KRCB sticker, a program guide, and I think it's a $5 coupon for coffee.
Flying Goat.
Yeah, Flying Goat. Best coffee in Sonoma County. And then we have some special gifts that relate to tonight. We have, at the $60 level, we have one of Julia Child's cookbooks.
Ooh.
It's going to remain a mystery until you call.
But I want it.
That's at the $60 level, and you can do that at $5 a month.
Yeah.
If you want to jump up to the $90 level, there is a Julia Child 3 DVD set.
Ooh.
So
yes.
if you some people learn by reading.
Yeah.
Some people learn by watching. And if you're one of those people who learns in that way by really watching, that 3 DVD set would be just the thing
great.
For you.
You can see exactly if there's some term you don't quite understand or you don't get, what end of the duck to grab first.
There you
perhaps.
Go. And you know, that was the thing about Julia. She was so empowering. She made you, she gave you the confidence that you could do it. The other thing we have also at the $90 level is a cookbook. Listen carefully. 2,000 recipes, 948 pages, 2,000 recipes. They focus on the cuisine of Italy's 20 regions. It was compiled by the Accademia Italiana della Cucina.
I'm hungry now.
And it's got you know, the real down home, earthy, not the foo-foo,
you know,
tower architectural stuff that chefs do, but, you know, chicken with lemons and capers, polenta with tomato sauce, and that you really want, and that you really want to
eat. And it won't frighten your guests because of unknown mysterious textures.
So that's at the $90 level.
That sounds good. 584-2020, folks.
So what we're going to do is we're going to talk for just a couple more minutes about Julia Child. We're going to trust that you really want to hear this interview, and that as soon as you get yourself settled with a glass of wine, a nice cold beer, a pencil to write anything down, you're going to give us a call, because you support Mouthful if you're listening. Write that number down one more time, 584-2020, area code 707.
Oh, yeah.
So what we're going to hear is, this was in 1999. Julia at that point was 88 years old.
Wow.
She was touring the country, I believe, with Jacques.
What an inspiration.
And just full of fire, as she'd always been. And the thing I started to say a minute ago is that in her books, and I think that's what she really prided herself on, explaining everything. So she didn't just say, bake for 350 You bake for 35 minutes. She had preheat the oven, put the rack in the middle.
Yes.
Set it in the middle of the oven, put the pan in the middle of the middle rack.
Yeah, I mean, there was
everything.
So that it was pretty fail-safe.
Yes.
So that you could feel very secure that there wasn't that, well, what if I think she means, oh, oops. There was none of that.
Yeah, and if you say, for example, if it says fold in. Now, if you've never really cooked, if you didn't cook at your aunt's side or your grandmother's or mama's side, you might not. You wouldn't know what fold meant.
It sounds very strange if you don't.
Yeah, so Julia, she explained all of those things. I remember the first recipe I recall cooking by her was country pâté.
Oh.
And it was, I was living in Katardi at the time, and I just decided that would be a really good thing to make for, I think it was for 12th night. And it involved boning a duck.
Oh, just
while,
like in the movie.
But having the skin unpierced.
Oh.
And there is one phone call. I'm going to let Allegra take that call. And I had never even held a duck in my hand before, and I just followed those instructions in mastering the art of French cooking, and lo and behold, that country pâté was so incredibly good. And it was that ability of Julia to, number one, sort of serve as your muse, like you could do this, and then walk you through. She never, ever let you down at any step in the process of cooking. The next intuitive move, she would be there for you, showing you how to do it. And that was one of my hesitations about the book Julie and Julia. And it was also, there's a great article that you could Google, and I will also post it on Mouthful's fan page after tonight's show. There's an article by Russ Parsons, who knew Julia quite well and lived in Los Angeles and was able to go visit her. And he asked her what she thought of the book. And she had heard about it, and I think she had read the blog, but not the book. And she was a little bit miffed because Julie Powell complained a lot.
Yeah, she was a bit. I don't know what she was like in real life. She has a cute persona. The actress who plays her in the movie is very cute, but she did whine a bit. And I was just amazed to think that Julia Child in her late 80s or early 90s would even read a blog.
To I know,
me,
isn't
that's
that great?
That's actually pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But it's hard to know. I don't know how much the actress in the movie resembled the personality of the real
Not
life
a lot.
Person. Yeah, because she was kind of cute.
Now, Julie in real life is very low affect.
Huh.
She wasn't very excited or engaged. She was just kind of, oh, yeah, I did that. I cooked them. Yeah, I did it all in a year. And, well, I threw a lot of food against the wall. I thought it was really hard. And Julia Child was like, wait a minute.
Joyful.
My recipes work. She's joyful, and she loves to cook, and she loves to feed people. There
she
was such joy
eat.
In
yes.
her that yeah. she was shocked that Julie Powell found the recipes difficult.
Oh,
that was the big comment. So I will definitely find that link. And I think for now we should just go ahead and hear from Julia Child herself, along with Jacques Pepin, which was October of 1999.
Just to set the proper somber tone and the point of seriousness that we know cooking and and drinking, you know, brings to life, the first question is probably best answered by Julia, but Jacques, feel free to jump in here.
Okay.
Julia, have you noticed a change in your audience as you've been traveling both before and after Jacques was named one of the sexiest people in America over 50?
Yeah, right. Yes, we seem to have a lot of panting young women in all of you. It seems to affect every age.
I don't know what happened there. I tell you that they didn't see me naked.
Well, maybe there's a new series in the making. the next question I want to address.
Well, I just wanted to tell John I did 6 series with KQED, not 3. 6.
3 different titles.
Well, 3 series for Today's Gourmet, 2 with Claudine and the series of Technique. And now with Julia. From Claudine to Julia.
Okay, the next question I want to address primarily to you, Jacques, but also Julia. And I've always wanted to ask you, but I want to hear your answer as well. It's very few cultural figures who have had the privilege of being parodied on Saturday Night Live. And there was the 30th anniversary special just a few weeks ago, and among the gems that they showed was your piece,
Yes.
What do you both think of that?
Well, you know what happened there, actually. I did a book called La Technique and After La Méthode, and I think that was 1978. At that point, I went on the Tom Snyder show in New York. Then in Los Angeles, he came back to New York, went back to Los Angeles. At that point, he was in Los Angeles. And he said, can you come with Julia on the show? And it was an hour and a half show, just the two of us. And I said, great. So, and Paul was, Julia's husband was on it too, doing Cocktail. So I was doing a book tour for La Méthode, and I was actually in Boston. And Julia was in Santa Barbara, in Pasadena. And they called me, and I said, well, ask Julia. You know, she called me, what do you want to cook? I said, Julia, whatever you want. So she bought fillet of beef, shrimp. I mean, we had enough food to feed the whole audience. We didn't have any recipe. So with me, you know, traveling, I had one knife with me because I was doing that book tour. And, you know, you go to a place for a demonstration, and they say, we want you to do a great thing. And you say, well, what kind of equipment you have? And they say, well, we have an outlet. It's about the equipment. So I had that knife with me to do a tomato roll or something. So that knife was taken by the hostess, by the security when I went through the thing. They gave it to the flight attendant. Finally, she gave me back my knife, and when I came out of the airport, they rushed me out. I couldn't wait for my luggage, I mean, real Hollywood style, because they already had to push the taping for half an hour. So we get there just maybe 5-6 minutes before we start taping. I get on stage, they put some makeup on me, I put my knife on the table, and Julia was arranging things around. She take my knife, cut an onion, cut the end of her finger with it. Yeah, so she pushed that. And she's a real trooper, I tell you. She pushed that piece back. In fact, after the show, we went, remember, to the hospital. You had some stitches. Then we went to L'Hermitage. We had a dinner, like, with 8 courses and 8 different types of wine. So, but in any case, I don't want to make that story too long. She cut her finger there. So we started the show. And, you know, we told Tom Snyder, well, you know, we'd rather not mention it. Well, he started by saying the show, see, Julia and Jack said, Julia, do you mind if I tell people you cut your finger? So the day after, I think you were on Johnny Carson.
No, all they talk after, about... That was right afterwards. Yeah, I was on Johnny this big bandit.
So we were on Catherine Grosby's show together. Maybe four. Again, all they talk about was her finger. And finally, we have Dan Aykroyd on... You know, Saturday Night Live.
So it was actually, I didn't know it was based on the actual incident.
Yeah, it was based
on
that.
Well, it was really worthwhile.
Remember, he's going there and he fall over and says, save the liver.
If you haven't seen it, really? Try. It's
that was
precious.
Funny.
On a slightly more serious note, Julia, the fat police, as well as the salt police, seem to be all-powerful in the 80s. Have you noticed a decline in their power in recent years?
The fat police... Well, I think it's terrible what fear of fat has done to a lot of our industries. They have ruined the beef industry. We now have second-class beef. Only 2% of our beef is prime. And it's all because of these fear of fat people. They don't want to eat a marbled steak. And so it means that the beef has very little flavor anymore. It's really nothing. A lot of people will say, oh, really, I don't really like beef very much anyway. But no wonder, because they've ruined it.
I agree.
You say something.
Have you noticed something similar with pork?
And they've ruined pork as well.
They're ruining everything.
They're ruining things.
Has the sentiment, do you think, changed with your audiences? Are your audiences less afraid of fat these days?
Well, we hope so. I think that swinging back to a more normal and sensible diet.
Yes.
Now, you know, you couldn't eat eggs for a long while. Now they say you can eat 2 a day.
Yes, we're back to 2 eggs a day.
Thing is, don't pay any attention to those people at all.
Great. Okay.
Well, the pendulum do swing, you know, because... Yes. I remember years ago, I mean, when I came to this country, people ate half a stick of butter for breakfast on their bread, and people were fine, realizing we are now 30% fatter than we were 15 years ago, and it's been 15 years of total torture and obsession about fat, and we're 30% fatter. So, I mean, years ago, we used to have a lot of butter for our bread. Everyone was fine. And now we move on to margarine, which, of course, is worse than butter for many reasons. And now you go to a restaurant, they give you a soup plate of olive oil. People dunk their bread in it like they are saving their life, you know. I mean, things go...
This leads perfectly into my next question. When you each started out, it seems that ingredients were not as hadn't reached the level of quality, some ingredients that they have today. It seems that our palates in America certainly were less sophisticated, but at the same time, it seemed like more people cooked. There was more home cooking. People went out to dinner at a fraction of number of times a week as they do now. Today, we have great farm market products. We have a great level of sophistication, but cooking seems to be increasingly a spectator sport. And I'm just wondering about both of your observations of that arc.
We don't believe it.
No,
oh,
we
good.
Don't. We've met two or three people who run cooking schools around here, and that they're just flooded with people who want to join them. And as you described, the supermarkets now.
And we always say the supermarkets are so bountifully full of incredible merchandise, which 30 years ago, there was two salads, you know, iceberg and romaine. There was no leek, no shallot, none of the oriental vegetable. I mean, no oil,
mushrooms.
Incredible. Now you go to a supermarket, it's amazing. So if no one cooks, they probably have a dump truck at the end of the week getting the stuff out, filling it up again. Somebody is buying the stuff, so someone is cooking.
So you think there's been a general overall improvement since you both began talking to Americans about cooking?
I think the people are much more sophisticated. I mean, we know much more about food, and we eat many more different things than we did.
And the sophistication, of course, went on with wine. I mean, this parallel with the food, because you have to bring people into food or into wine one way or the other. And I remember years ago, you'll go to a place, you know, I remember one time I was in Philadelphia invited and people had Lafitte and incredible wine. I opened the refrigerator and I knew the TV dinner, looking at what I was looking in the freezer and refrigerator, you know, to paraphrase Bria Savarin, who said, tell me what you eat, I'll tell you who you are. I said, show me your refrigerator, tell you who you are. And I knew that people really didn't drink wine, but it was kind of snobbish. But it's fine. You go in this way, then eventually you start liking it, then you have it maybe once a week with your wife, and eventually you open a bottle of wine when you eat, which is a normal progression. And, of course, the quality of wine as well as the quality of food has been extraordinary. I mean, look at that beautiful place. My daughter was in apprenticeship here for 4 months, and I can't see how much she suffered for 4 months being around here in her apprenticeship on wine.
And while we're on wine, I would like to say we're just delighted that we're sponsored by Kendall Jackson.
Yes.
It's delicious wine.
This is good.
It would
huh?
be horrible if we were in a wine that we didn't like. But this is...
Can you imagine if we were sponsored by Coca-Cola and we had to drink Coke all the time?
Well, this is just a delicious one.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
But look at the ingredient in the garden there, 100 yes. different types of tomato. It's absolutely amazing. And then maybe after the food and the wine, maybe 7, 8 years ago, probably a bit longer in the Bay Area, bread exploded. And we have bread now, incredible. And now we're moving into cheese, which is a normal progression. Wine.
Mm-hmm. You begin with bread.
It's amazing.
Move on to some yes. cheese to go with it. The next question is personal for each of you. And I'm wondering if there is either any single food or any particular meal or eating occasion that when you recall it or when you taste it, it conjures up emotions, not so much of a flavor or a taste recalled, but of profound emotional moments in your life. I mean, so many people are writing about that. Certainly MFK Fisher really
right.
paved the way. But I'm wondering if you could talk about a moment or of memory.
I think Proust wrote about it before
yes,
MFK Fisher, you know,
did.
In the Little Madeleine.
yeah.
But without any question, I would agree with you there. You have the greatest wine and you have the greatest food if you partake it with people you can't stand, you know, it doesn't go well. It doesn't digest the right way. And Or if you go to a restaurant, we do now, and people pick in your plate and shove stuff in your mouth and get totally crazy about analyzing every morsel of what they have. And each time they eat something, they want to have an orgasm. I mean, they go... and that, you do get tired of this, and you want to go out and have a taco and a beer or something.
But, yes. I agree completely.
When I think of food, yes, I remember the food, but I remember particularly the occasion, you know, family usually would think of my father, now my mother, certain meal that we had when I was a kid. And even sharing, as we do with Julia, and to a certain extent, that's what we wanted to show in the show, you know, the conviviality and the fun of being together and cooking and partaking and drinking a bottle of wine or whatever. That's great. That's what brings great memories.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Julia?
I would say the same thing. I don't really like that question.
Oh dear. Well, how about a variation on the theme? Is there was there a favorite food from your childhood that you still absolutely love?
Well, I was always very hungry as a child. I really ate just about everything that was put before me. The things like, I mean, the normal comfort foods like baked potatoes with lots of butter in them.
Yes.
And the old-fashioned porterhouse steak, which we used to have. My, that used to be good. It was juicy. It had so much steaky flavor. I just haven't eaten a steak like that for some time. How about you, Jack?
Yeah, well, you know, that's funny you say that. My mother is 85 years old now, and she's been coming to the state for many years. I've been here 40 years. And I tell you, she loves steak. You know, and I always take her like to a steakhouse to have like standing rib roast, and each time she goes, "Oh my God, it's like for six people in front." I mean, you have, but she eat the whole thing each time. You know? Triple banana split after a year. Yeah, she loves it. It's great. I mean, partaking of food, you know, goes on maybe a few hours after you're born, and maybe a few hours after you die. It's a very long occupation. But and to paraphrase maybe Voltaire, who said, "Imagine how dreary it would be, you know, to have to eat and drink three times a day, if God had not made it a necessity. I mean, a pleasure as well as a necessity." So we have the okay from above, and we should enjoy our food and our pleasure.
Sure.
People are terrorized to have pleasure, you know, when they eat. You should enjoy it.
And I don't think they probably live very long if they are afraid of their food and not enjoy it.
Talk about that man who was on that show with you.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, this morning on the TV, I happened to see Arthur Schwartz, and he is a radio interviewer. And several years ago, when I think, I don't know, it was The Way to Cook or which book it was, we were interviewed by Arthur, and we were talking about nutrition, one of my favorite subjects. And he was mentioned talking about one of these diet doctors who didn't eat any fat at all. And he was a rather yellowish, greenish-looking man. And he just, I mean, his idea, I think, food was a penance. And Arthur said, and no fat. And Arthur looked down on him, and he was covered in dandruff.
And then what happened to him?
Well, he died very early. He was only in his early 70s when he died. I also felt...
A young man.
Awful felt that if he'd had a decent meal or two, he might still be around.
Well, you two certainly seem like you get along very well. But one of the questions from the audience is, did you have any disagreements while you were filming the new show? And there seems to be a rumor going around that, Julia, you referred to Jacques as a macho Frenchman.
Oh, he is. He is, as you can see.
Is that a compliment?
I don't know. I hope.
It might be.
Well, I like macho men, so that's fine.
Well, we did have small differences. I mean, from Julia likes white pepper, I like black peppercorn. You know, I use kosher salt. She doesn't want to use kosher salt. But, you know, those are fun and little bantering in the kitchen. We didn't have any recipes, so, you know, we wanted to show the people to get away a little bit from the rigidity or the constraint or the structure of a written recipe, and we cook the way friend or spouse would be cooking in the kitchen. We had an idea, we're going to do a stew or a roast chicken, and then we had a lot of ingredients in front of us and more ingredients we could use, and we started cooking. And then Julia tests, she says, I think it needs more salt, or we test, I think it should be reduced a bit more. And this is the idea of putting A and B and moving with the food, directing the food and creating a dish. You know, I see people who never taste in the kitchen. I can't cook without tasting all the time.
Well, you have to taste all right. the time. And then it was difficult. We didn't want to write the book itself. So we had a writer, very able, David Nussbaum, and there were no recipes for him, so that he had to look at the tapes, and we had four cameras, and we taped for about 2 hours, so he had 8 hours of tape that he had to look at.
Yes, the guy was sick.
And then he wrote the recipes, wrote the book, and then we corrected what was needed, and then
then
we have the little sidebars on either side where Jack has what he has to say, and I'll say what I want to say.
Yeah.
So that we have slight disagreements in that, but nothing serious because our backgrounds are much the same.
Yes, actually, I'm celebrating my 50th year as a professional chef this year, and Julia also, she get into the Cordon Bleu in Paris in 1949, just as I was going into apprenticeship. So we came from the same stock.
We're really twins under this skin.
But I have to say that, yes, the consensus, I mean, the idea of conviviality, sharing wood, sharing wine, and sharing food together in the kitchen, family structure, those are important part of the book. And on the whole, we do agree that taste, for example, is more important than presentation. We do agree that proper technique is important. We agree on the simplicity of recipe. We agree on seasonable ingredient and quality of ingredient. I mean, those are important things, you know, that we agree on.
And that you have a joyful occasion when you're cooking.
Yes. another question that I thought was interestingly phrased and speaks, I think, as much to history and a convergence of so many things is, how did you become as well-known as you have?
I can thank public television. I wouldn't exist without it.
Yes.
Because if you were on commercial television, you wouldn't be able to do what you wanted to. We can each do exactly what we want. I can do tripe, for instance. You could not do that on NBC, I don't think.
Yes, no, I agree entirely with it. I mean, you know, public television, unless we have people like you helping public television. For me, as a Frenchman, actually I'm from Connecticut, but I can recognize my Yankee drawl, it's pure Connecticut. But in France, close to 5%, almost 6% of the national growth is given to public service, museum and all kind of things. And in the United States, it's 0.01%. You know, so it's absolutely amazing. So unless we had people like you to support that type of program, public television, we wouldn't be there.
Supporting a museum or anything else.
Yes.
Right.
Jacques, you got your master's degree in French literature,
right.
And you had pursued a number of endeavors before you began cooking professionally before the public. Do either of you have any regrets as you reflect back on what you have done with cooking?
No, I was always a cook. I've been 50 years. I left home when I was 13 years old and home with a restaurant where my mother was the chef. So when I went back to school, because I'd never been to school, so I went to Columbia for years and years, and it was just for my own gratification and
just
and
fun. Because you loved French literature?
I never really would have changed anyway what I was doing. So it was just for the pleasure of it, and that's the best way of studying it, really.
I just feel I was very lucky to get into this profession because I just love it. I was way back in the 30s, I was in at I went to Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts, where my mother had gone. And at that point, there wasn't anything that women could do. You could be a nurse or a secretary or a teacher or once in a while an academic. Well, there are really no careers open, and that's hard for someone your age to realize, isn't it, Misha? Yeah.
No. I was at the crossroads, I think.
Well, there wasn't much. And I just had a good time at college, and I didn't really get turned on until I went over to France and got into cooking. I can remember my very first meal. We came over by boat, because in those days there weren't any flights over. And we drove to Rouen, and that was my first French meal, and I just never got over it. And I went right into cooking. I had recently gotten married, and so I had started with Gourmet magazine and Joy of Cooking, but I really didn't know much. And I just...
CIA, as you may know, so she was a spy in Europe.
Except I wasn't a spy, I was a file clerk the whole war. But sounded good.
She was in
China. Thank you.
She was in China. She would have been totally innocuous in China.
Okay, I think one last question. A very simple ingredients question. What do you think of the truffles being grown in America? Have you tasted them?
I haven't tasted any. Have you?
I have tasted them.
Where are they grown?
There were some being done here and a little bit further north in Mendocino County. I found them rather mild, much milder.
Wait. I mean, I don't know about this, and I keep up on that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I know that I've had a truffle from Oregon, the Tiburum gibbosum. Sounds very pedantic to say it in Latin, but I'm into mushroom, and I pick up about 200-300 pounds of wild mushroom a year in Connecticut. And the Tiburum gibbosum, which is the white truffle, pebble size, found in Oregon. And the Carthaginian, which is the black one, again in Oregon. But there is only two really viable truffle, which is the Tuberum melanosporum, the black truffle, mostly known from the area of Bordeaux in France, and the Tuberum magnatum, the white truffle of Italy, which this year cost $2,600 a pound in New York.
Wow.
The black one is about $650. Mm-hmm. But I know that years ago there was a guy who came from France and succeeded in isolating the mycelium of truffle. And I know that they did the growth. You know, it was a guy, remember, in Sonoma Valley. What was his name? Pico. No, but first he was here in Sonoma, I think, somewhere. Then he grew those trees, and he did a survey from all over the country and ended up planting those trees in Austin, Texas. And then he went bankrupt. And I did a piece on truffle for the Sunday Time magazine a number of years ago, and I got truffle at Urbani in New York, which is the largest importer of truffle in the world. And at that point, he brought me a truffle. It was 5 years after Pico had left. He had went bankrupt, and they started finding truffle there. And I didn't even know whether it was a Tuberum brumalei, which is a melanosporum. They sent it to Europe for analysis, and I don't know what happened. But I never heard that they grow truffle there. I know they've tried. See, there is 50 different subterranean mushrooms which have the right to be called truffle, but there is basically three which are worth anything. The rest are just black things underground which have no taste.
Okay, well...
So I don't know about it.
Yeah.
I'm very interested in this.
Yeah. They're not European truffles, the one I've tasted. Certainly, they're very mild.
Yeah, I mean, you have the Tuberum estivum, which is the summer truffle. It's fine. It's great, it's fine, but it has no taste at all. It's not worth it. It's about $80, $90 a pound. It's far to be that expensive, but it really doesn't have more taste than a regular mushroom, probably less. So, who cares?
Okay, John, it's all yours. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, Jess, and... Jess and Barbara, the wine is delicious, and thank you very much for your hospitality.
Meaningless, but I say it just to reach you, Julia. Julia, Julia, Ocean. Oh,
so I sing the song of love.
It's Michelle Jordan. That was Julia Childs and Jacques Pepin, of course, recorded here in Santa Rosa in 1999. Isn't it just a joy to, I mean, no one has a voice as recognizable as Julia. And then there's that marvelous French accent from Jacques.
Oh, it just makes you feel like you're there.
Yeah.
It really does.
And, you know, her legacy just lives on in so many ways. And next week you'll hear more about really what kind of person she was. And one of those qualities that she had right up until the end was she was accessible. If
yes.
she went to the grocery store, she didn't care if people flocked around her and started asking her questions. It was Stephanie or whoever else might be accompanying her who sort of had to deal with yeah. that. She was very encouraging to people who wanted to get involved
in
cooking.
That probably is what some people would say is what made her an American French chef. Instead of, they mm-hmm. might be more intimidated to go up to, you know, a real French chef.
Yeah. And Julia always heard her say this many, many times. She says, I'm not a chef. I am a cook. And she had it exactly right in that up until really the last decade or maybe two decades, a chef was trained to work in a hotel. The work of a chef was codified. It was very specific. And they did production work.
And for probably large quantities.
Usually large quantities, and they had very much a staff. And she would always say, I'm not a chef. I am a cook.
Oh, wow.
And I think that that's really an important... I always loved when she would say that. And let me tell you, we would love for you to join us. 584-2020 is the number. And we have some very special thank you gifts. And I think it would be just great if we got five calls before 8 o'clock.
We would be so excited. We would be very excited.
If you are already a member, or even if you have already pledged... so far in this membership drive, you can call again and just adopt a watt. It's $20, and
$20
you get a full bottle of red wine
I'm gonna
as a
have
thank
to
you
call
gift.
And do this again and again. Because
I'm going to be adopting a few watts myself. But one of the thank you gifts we have, and this is like at the $5 a month, or if you want to pay it all at once, the $60 level, it's a book entitled The French Chef. And now, if you don't remember, if you weren't paying attention, if you weren't alive, and if you've never thought about it, Julia's first book was Mastering the Art of French Cooking. It was not called The French Chef. It took her 6 to 7 years to write that book.
Wow.
She was so thorough. It took her a very long time to get it published. Eventually worked with Judith Jones to get it published. And Judith was on Mouthful a couple of years ago and talked about getting that. And we may air that since we're doing the sort of remembrance of Julia Child.
That'd
I may
be great.
Do some excerpts from that. But the book that we're offering at the $60 level, again, that's $5 a month and the number 584-2020. It is The French Chef, and it is all of the recipes from what I believe are the first 190 shows or something like that.
Wow.
119 shows that made Julia a household name and changed forever the way Americans cook. So that is the book, The French Chef with Julia Child. It is a treasure.
584-2020.
And there we have one call, and we can certainly take more calls, and I hope that will be you. We also have thank you packages at every level. Let me tell you about that at $90. You have your choice. La Cucina, a cookbook from the Academy of the Academy Italiano di Cucina, I think it is. It has 2,000 traditional Italian recipes. These are not restaurant recipes. These are recipes from how people cook and eat in homes of the 20 regions of Italy. Really delicious thing. That's a $45 cookbook, and that is something you can choose at the $90 level as well. And I think $90 is $7.50 a month. You can put that automatically on your credit card. We would love to get a few more calls. 584-2020 is the number. You can also go to krcb.org.
And you can then pick up, you can tell when you go online, you can select the premium that you want.
That's right.
For the
It'll
amount
all be
you
there.
Want to pledge. It'll
yes.
all be there.
Makes it very easy for you if you are comfortable with a computer. And I If you are on Facebook, if you want to join Facebook, you can go to the Mouthful page. After every show, I give sort of a roundup of what we did. Any links that are important, I am going to link to the Russ Parsons article about Julia Child's reaction to the book Julie and Julia, or the blog, I should say. And anything else relevant, and I will have, there is already a link there, but I will have another link to the donation page or the membership page.
And we do appreciate your calls, because this is listener-supported radio, and without you,
we wouldn't exist.
We wouldn't even
We've
be
made
here.
It 15 years, and it's such an exciting time to have our signal. Already it should be sounding different no matter where you are. There are some things that only really an engineer could explain to you.
And we don't want to do this right now.
We can't do that. I couldn't do it even if I tried.
I'd rather talk about butter.
It even sounds that, and we will. Before the hour is over, we will talk about butter. I'll tell you why it's good for you. But I can already tell just the way it sounds when you're here in the studio with headphones on.
Yeah.
So the improvement of the quality of the signal has already been done. And now between... You know, the various ways that KRCB raises money directly from the community. One of the ways that we're doing that is by offering all of our watts for
all
adoption. You can adopt a watt. It is $20. You can have lots of fun with it. Several of the programmers here have been playing... On Friday night, Mark Nichols, who's on just before Red Shoes Radio, he did 2 hours of songs with Watt in the title.
Oh, my goodness.
I made a CD lots of songs with Watt in the
What's
title.
What's it all about?
I missed that one.
Alfie.
I've kept Insensible Watt.
Oh.
Anyway, we have lots of fun, but we need to be serious to be able to have our fun, because we have to raise $75,000 to get that antenna built, and we also get nearly all of our operating expenses
from
the community.
Yeah,
that's what it means, community radio. One of the levels that is really great and has been very popular is the $200 level. It's called
the community activist promo. Yeah, that's a great deal, because you get for the $200 fee, you get how many weeks?
I think
is it?
you get 10 or 12. You get, first of all, a spot, which is like a promotional
public
service announcement.
Yeah.
You get that recorded. I think you can even say who you would like to record it and help you write it. For your nonprofit, a nonprofit organization that you really want your community to hear about. And then it's aired 12 times during drive time.
Yeah, so
during
it's the highest listening time. And this supports both the station and whatever your particular favorite cause or nonprofit event,
sort of thing. And there have been some really interesting ones. So that's another great way to get involved. Now, I promised we're going to tell you why butter is good for you. I do talk about this
butter
all the time on Mouthful.
Butter is my friend.
584-2020 is the number, 707-584-2020 or krcb.org. Butter.
Butter. It's not even www.butter, is it?
It'd be a great website to have.
Butter. It's probably taken.
The fat of ruminants. A ruminant is an animal that chews its cud. The fat of ruminants is good for humans. It carries in it a minimum of 17 different micronutrients, many of which we don't get anywhere else or in few other places. Now, if you think about it, everything is concentrated in fat.
That's true.
So if there is residual pesticides or that sort of thing, that will also be concentrated in fat. But nutrients are also concentrated. So just one of those, and I'm going to do a whole show on butter one of these days, but just one of those nutrients.
Can I taste test?
Yes, you can be here, Allegra. I promise. Just one of those nutrients is something called butyric acid. Now, butyric acid has been demonstrated in the laboratory. It helps form brain neurons.
Oh.
It helps your body grow neurons.
Wow.
It also has been shown to reduce the growth of tumors, both breast cancer tumors and other types of cancerous tumors. So that's just butyric acid. So butter is good for you. Of course, you don't sit around and eat sticks of butter. I mean,
depends on how old you are.
But it's, you know, a varied diet is a good thing.
And
but when it comes to fat, butter is one of the best fats for you. Also, when you cook butter at high temperature, this is something that's been very controversial lately. Oils, including olive oil, will develop will turn toxic at higher temperatures. Yeah. Butter does not. Butter can withstand high temperatures without turning toxic. And on that note, I'm going to tell you the number one more time. 584-2020 is the number. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support here on Mouthful and for public radio in general. It is Michelle Anna Jordan saying have a great week and tune in next week for more remembering of Julia Child on Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour.